now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astral robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And babes.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain! Back to the House of Pain!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast. From classics to cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are B, but the entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, and we're here with episode number 3, and I'm joined by my dad, Al Giaconetti, again.
Hey, Jason, how are you? Hey, we're finally getting into my childhood hero, Ray Harryhausen, today.
Yeah, this is going to be the first in what's referring to as the Film Fantasy Scrapbook Series. We're going to be covering 1955, It Came From Beneath the Sea. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
A tidal wave of terror engulfs the screen as a raging monster from the dawn of creation attacks the world of man.
Here, gentlemen, is your villain.
We take an enormous number of those to disable a Navy submarine.
Or just one of enormous size, Mr. Chase.
I see they picked an atom sub to go out and fight this thing. Why is that, Commander?
Could be because of the new electronic equipment, or her speed.
Was she ordered back here from Hawaii just for that?
That's right. I think it's as bad as that, do you? I think we're lucky she's here.
The H-bomb blasted it loose from the depths of the Pacific. But not even the H-bomb can kill it.
Unknown object coming this way. Entering minefield. Stand by, number 38, mine.
Fire.
Go up. Ready, number 12, south.
Fire.
Coming on through.
And that's the end of our first line of defense, Miss Joyce.
Then the red alert.
West Coast reels under Holocaust as the men and weapons of the atomic age battle to the death against the ageless monster of the deep.
It Came From Beneath the Sea was released in July 1955 and has a running time of 79 minutes. It was directed by Robert Gordon and produced by Charles Schneer. It was written by Hal Smith.
Jason, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Hal Smith, to the general public, was not really known as a writer. He turned out to be Otis Campbell on the Andy Griffith Show from 1960 to 1967. He played the drunk and was constantly in Andy's jail.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Also, George Worthing Yates, that name might sound familiar. If you listen to the second episode of For Them, he also wrote that. The movie was narrated by William Woodson. The production company was Clover Production. Now, that may not necessarily ring a bell with people, but the name Sam Katzman might. Sam Katzman was known for cutting corners, and you'll hear about that today, as he made sure that he was getting the pictures made on the cheap and making sure he got his stuff out as quick as possible. Distributed by Columbia Pictures, the budget came in at about $150,000, and it took in $1.7 million in the box office worldwide. Our stars are names that might sound familiar to people who enjoy these types of movies. The main star is Kenneth Toby. He plays Commander Peter Matthews. Now, that name might sound familiar, as he was also the lead in The Thing from Another World, 1951. He has a part in The Beast in 20,000 Fathom, another Harryhausen movie. And for some of those who are into more of the horror, he's the old cop in The Howling from 1981. Faith DeMerg plays Professor Leslie Joyce. She also, in 1955, made a little movie called This Island Earth. And Donald Curtis is Dr. John Carter. They are the three main leads. He, the next year, went on to make The Ten Commandments, and also made Earth vs. the Flying Saucers, which is another Harryhausen movie. A nuclear submarine is on maneuvers in the Pacific Ocean and is commanded by Captain Peter Matthews. They come into contact with a massive sonar signal, which they cannot shake. The sub is trapped, but they are able to break free and return to Pearl Harbor for repairs. Chunks of tissue from a huge sea creature is discovered jammed in the sub's dive planes. A team of top biologists are brought in to determine what the tissue is from. Professor Leslie Joyce and Dr. John Carter identify the tissue as being part of a gigantic octopus. They determine that a hydrogen bomb forced a creature up from the Minnedoah Depth and has made the beast radioactive, which has driven off its natural food supply. The military does not believe them, but once a French shipping boat is sunk, they realize that they may be correct. As they investigate several leads, Pete and Leslie go to the Oregon coast to find out what happened to the three missing people. The octopus attacks the coast, which leads to all shipping being halted and the Pacific mined. An electrified safety net was strung from the Golden Gate Bridge to block the entrance to the San Francisco Bay. They bait the water with dead sharks, trying to lure the beast in. They designed a special jet-propelled torpedo that acts like a harpoon and can be detonated remotely. As they wait on the creature, the press is briefed and the people are informed of the situation. The octopus is able to navigate the minefield without being slowed. As the electrified net is turned on, the octopus attacks instead of retreating. The octopus begins crushing and tearing apart the Golden Gate Bridge. The bridge is abandoned, but the voltage is left on. Dr. Carter races onto the bridge to cut the circuit, but the beast continues to destroy the section of bridge. Commander Matthews arrives just in time to save Carter, and the beast retreats. San Francisco goes into a state of panic, as a mass evacuation just causes more chaos. The beast surfaces by the ferry building and the shipping yard. It begins to pull itself up out of the bay as its tentacles grab for food. The tentacles kill dozens as it crushes and drags their bodies back to be consumed. As the sub gets in place, flamethrowers are used to drive the tentacles back. As the beast retreats to the water, the torpedo is fired into the octopus's body. Matthews uses an aqua lung to place an explosive charge on the beast's body, but is knocked out by the blast. Carter gets a second explosive and a harpoon gun, and using another aqua lung, shoots the octopus in the eye, which causes it to react violently. The sub is free, and the octopus retreats for open water. Carter saves Matthews as the torpedo is remotely detonated. Matthews and Carter are rescued, and the beast is dead. There it is, folks. That's the brass tacks of this movie. It is one of the movies that, when you see the iconic part, Golden Gate Bridge is the very iconic part of this when it's ripping it down. And we'll talk about some of the stuff Harryhausen had to do with this movie, but that's the iconic part of this. And it's funny because the Golden Gate Bridge, the founding fathers of San Francisco, or however you want to put it, they said they could not use the Golden Gate Bridge in this movie. They couldn't film at it. So they got a bread truck and they filmed out the back of it with a camera to make the plates that they used. One of the other things this movie is known for, absolutely known for, is the fact that, as I mentioned, this was a Katzman production, and Sam Katzman liked to make movies on the cheap, and he definitely was the king of the double feature and stuff like that, and you'll hear his name many times throughout this show and other future shows, was that the octopus only had six legs. The Sixtopus, or Sextopus, as was as Harryhausen later described it, and that was later leaked into a science fiction magazine later after the movie came out. Harryhausen had to make sure he disguised the other two legs in the scenes, especially when they're in the water. Any of the scenes where the creature is reaching onto the land or any of that stuff, it's easy because you're not going to have all eight of the tentacles out of the water. But the scene where they shoot the torpedo into it, they had to hide the two legs, so they purposely shot it so it was again back against the wall into the bay.
You know, Jay, getting back to the founding fathers, at the time, Earl Warren, who eventually became one of the Supreme Court justices, was the governor of California, and on his team was one of the city fathers. And when they found out that, or when they were asked to be allowed to shoot the Golden Gate Bridge, the gentleman wanted to know what the full story was, because any type of commercial use of the bridge has to be approved. When they said that it was going to be a horror movie or a monster movie where this giant octopus was going to tear the bridge down, that was the end of it. Now, the story about the bread truck going across the bridge, it might have happened once or twice, but filming out of the back end of the bread truck would not have given the film crew enough film to actually use in the production. Later on, it was theorized that Katzman and Harryhausen cooked that little scheme up just to have more publicity for the film. But when you see the actual usage of the cars driving over, there's no way you could have had that coming out of the back of a bread truck. So there's all these little nooks and crannies that go on with production that later on you find out, and it just enhances the pleasure of watching the movie.
Yeah, as we mentioned, you know, Columbia was the distribution company for this, so they booked this on a double bill with the Creature with an Atomic Brain, also from 55, all across the U.S. And that was, again, another comedy for these B-movies. Even though this movie will go on because of Harryhausen's name being attached, and then this is being when Harryhausen and Charles Schneer, you know, met up, and this is the movie that caused that, many, many movies afterwards, but the two of them working together. These B-movie programmers, they definitely put them together. And this, even though it's looked back on kind of as like a timeless movie because of Harryhausen's effects, at the time, this was just another programmer, just like they thought of them, and just like they thought of it. It came from The Terror from Beyond Space or any of the other number of movies. They were making these movies cheap. And the problem was, and this is later became evident when people like Bird Eye Gordon got involved and stuff like that, making movies, and Roger Corman, Ray Harryhausen's process of animating, of doing the stop motion animation, was not fast. He had to shoot scenes, and he had to shoot with, depending on if there was a plate to go behind it, and he had to animate the miniature in front. Now, it's one thing if you're animating something that is a single motion thing, but you start animating multiple tentacles at one time, that became much harder. It's something he actually spoke about in, there's several different documentaries out there that he spoke about having to animate the heads of the Hydra and Jason and the Argonauts, and which head was going which way, and you know, there's seven to deal with, and having that was one of the issues he had here. So he tried to keep things as simple as possible. Any scene where you saw just one tentacle, it was just one tentacle. He didn't use the entire model. He just used that one tentacle. Especially the scenes in the streets where they're reaching down, it's grabbing the people, it's crushing them and bring them in, or where it's reacting to the flamethrower. And that was one of the things that later on, that's why they went to using guys in suits, and they went to using actual animals just superimposed on top of it, because it just became much more cost-effective for them to do those type of things, even if the quality necessarily looked the same. One of the things I thought was funny was the ship that the octopus sinks was just a model ship that Harryhausen went to the Five and Dime, picked up, and built together. He's like, I'm going to crush it anyway. Why bother going crazy building the expensive miniature? And when you look at the movie, clearly you know that it's stop motion animation. This is, you know, we're you know, 60 years removed from this. But you start looking at how he was able to capture and create real looking movement from a, you know, a little puppet.
Yeah, you know, Jay, you know, in stop motion, Harryhausen was filming each one of these scenes one frame at a time. And when you think that a second is 24 frames, you can then really appreciate the amount of time and effort that it took to get any one of these scenes on film. And the more complicated it was, the longer it took. And that's really why, when after Harryhausen's big success with the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, he really didn't get any more offers. He wound up going back into his own shop and putting out his things called puppet tunes, like The Tortoise and the Hare, The Three Little Pigs, mm-hmm. etc. And it was only because Charles Schneer came along and remembered The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms and watched it again and contacted Harryhausen that he actually got involved with making all of these future stop-motion films. When you think about it, had Schneer not come along, we may never have known how great a talent Harryhausen was.
Yeah, and to be honest, you've heard me talk about this on the first episode, and we talked about this during our episode of Them. Harryhausen is one of the people. He didn't get an Academy Award until much, much later. In fact, it was the year Tom Hanks presented it, and he actually said that his favorite movie wasn't whatever it was, Jason and the Argonauts, which is one of my all-time favorites too. And it's true, because what happened was it just wasn't cost-effective for what they were doing, but he was giving you a much better product. And I think once they got to the point, where he was like, he wanted to put out a better product, because you're putting out better movies, people responded with that. Harryhausen's movies never were the top grossing movie of the year, because you're going up against movies, as we mentioned, The Ten Commandments and things like that all came out in the same time. But his movies always made money. Anytime he would do that, they made money. And what the great part was, you didn't have to go get big name actors for this. Now, these are actors that were completely competent. They did a great job what they were doing, but you didn't need to go get major stars. You didn't need Charlton Heston in your movie if Harryhausen was doing the effects, because his effects sold it. The poster sold it. The poster for It Came From Beneath the Sea has the three main leads on it and the title, but it shows the octopus. It's showing it. And the key is this, is that at no time are you thinking like, they're not trying to hide what it is. He's telling you, this is what this movie's about. You see that later with 20 Million Miles to Earth, Earth vs. the Flying Saucers, all of the Sinbad movies, okay? They show it. I mean, the poster art for this movie, any number of different posters, it shows it ripping apart the ferry building. And that was really what's there. It's a drawing of the scene from the movie, but they definitely put that out there. And they knew who they were playing to, too. These were not supposed to be they're not A pictures. They're playing to the Saturday matinee crowd, right? The people who, like my dad, who were the right age to go see these movies in the theater. And now, actually, my brother, myself, and all of us who love these, even my daughter now at 5, are able to watch and appreciate what's going on. We're able to look back at this, but they did not think that they were turning out Gone with the Wind every time. They knew they were turning out 79 to 80 minute movies that they are popcorn movies. And there's something to be said about that. My dad and I talk about that all the time. When Academy Award season comes around and there's like 20 movies you've never heard of, but they're all the greatest movie you've ever seen. And you're like, huh, didn't like Avengers make $1 billion this year? Didn't Star Wars make a couple $1 billion? And you're like, there are movies that are made to make money and there are movies that are made to be artsy. These movies have art in them. They have the great talents of Ray Harryhausen, but they were designed to make money. And if you're putting $150,000 into a movie and your return is like $1.7 million or $1.5 million, that's a great return on investment. Okay? If you could take $150,000 and put it in the bank and you guaranteed $1.5 million come out in a year, you'd take that deal every day. And that's to help get other movies made.
Yeah, I tell you, Jay, I think you hit it right on the head. The one thing that I appreciated a lot about the initial Harryhausen movies was he didn't just hit you over the head with the creatures. There was a story, and this one is the same way as Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. It was done in documentary style, where the story builds and builds and builds from the ship at sea. And there's this thing that's swimming towards San Francisco, and the tension that's being built here is palpable. And it helped that when they bring in the scientists, they start giving you some science behind what an octopus can do, what it can't do, what does it look like, where's its weak points, which turns out to be a very important part of how they actually destroy the monster. It appears that the creature is very vulnerable in its head, and that's where they shoot the torpedo. Sure, it goes into the eye because it's very cinematically striking.
I think that's probably funny. They shoot the torpedo in and it hunkers into, like, they don't show you, but it's obviously in the flesh, right? And then he goes out to set the explosive off to jar them loose, but the explosive goes off way too fast and knocks them out. So it's the scientist, not the scientist who appears to be played here as being older, Dr. Carter. He goes out, he shoots the thing right in the eye. And I'm like, well, that's going to hurt. I don't care who you are. You get a harpoon in your eye, it is going to mess you up. So, but one of the things that's funny is they tried to really pump up the idea of it being a nuclear-powered submarine, but they don't have those. So the submarines they were using were just regular submarines they had. And they actually filmed a ton. That's, again, Katzman's never won. Don't build a set if you can film on the real thing for the cheap. He actually filmed a lot of these scenes in actual submarines because it was cheaper to go into a submarine and shoot. And it really gave you that idea of it being authentic. And I think that's the key, too. You get a feeling that you're in a submarine because you are in a submarine. And when you look at the atomic-powered submarine shown cruising at the surface is actually the diesel-electric submarine, the USS Kubera SS-347. That's what they were shooting with. But again, sometimes you just kind of have to believe. You're willing to believe there's a giant octopus attacking San Francisco. You have to believe it's an atomic-powered submarine.
Yeah, the submarine, the nuclear-powered submarine, yeah, even though it was the Kubera, was based on the fact that in January of 1955, the USS Nautilus, the original nuclear-powered submarine, was launched. And so there was this awareness of the general public that nuclear-powered submarines were, in fact, viable.
Yeah.
And that was just added to the dramatic part of the movie.
Well, I think also, too, it has to do, if you think about it, think about the original Universal Horror. So if you're listening to this podcast, we are assuming that you know what when I say the original horrors, what I'm talking about, Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, the Mummy. What was used to bring the monster to life there? It was electricity. Electricity was at the turn of the century, that electricity was the thing. That was the greatest power. By the 1950s, we already knew that electricity wasn't the greatest power. We had already, World War II had happened. We had nuclear power was a real thing. Nuclear bombs, things like that. So what happened? So you look at electricity being what brought to life those old monsters. When you look at like any of the Frankenstein movies, or even the ones where they electrified, Lon Chaney Jr. I forgot what that movie's called, where he's glowing and everything he touches dies.
That was Man-Made Monster.
Man-Made Monster. There we go. All right, that's a classic on like Svengoolie on Saturday nights on MeTV. Those electricity was no longer the thing. You had to go nuclear, and that's why things had to get bigger. Because remember, folks, in this time we're talking about coming out of World War II. Things are never the same. Truly, once the bomb is dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, nothing is ever the same in the world. And I think people understood that too. And we also were in a time in the 1950s and early 60s when there was, we're getting into the Red Scare, we're getting into all that stuff that's coming out, and movies had to put that out there. And if movies like The Ten Commandments and Miracle on 34th Street weren't doing that, well, someone had to do it, and it was on people's minds. You had duck and cover drills in school, you had those things like that that we think now is like, oh, they're quaint, but that was what people believed. I mean, they thought somehow shielding your eyes would stop you from dying from the nuclear blast, but you had to do that. And when you see the rash of giant monster movies that came out, and whether we're talking about Harryhausen stuff or movies like Tarantula or like those kind of things, or the Black Scorpion or whatever it might be, a lot of times we're looking at fallout from a nuclear waste, or we're talking about the nuclear explosion, the H-bomb drove it up from the depths, because there are giant octopus, there are giant squids. They just don't live at the surface, they live way below the surface. And that's one of the things too, even Beast Troy and the Phasms, they're doing those explosions. They didn't create the beast, they freed the beast. And it was all about what door are we opening when we're looking at a nuclear age? And that's a lot of what they said at the very end of them, when he says, when man walked into the nuclear age, he doesn't, you know, what we necessarily are doing. So the other thing too, I thought was funny, not funny, but the special jet propelled torpedo is actually an aerial torpedo that is delivered by aircraft or by torpedo boats. And it had its propellers and rudder removed, they had to make something. They couldn't just use, it didn't make sense to have all the wings and stuff on it. So they had to have it shoot underwater. Okay. So if you are interested in purchasing, it came for me to see, you should go to the Two True Freaks website, click on the Amazon link and go, and you can pick it up there. On DVD, it's $9.99 by itself, but I'll be honest with you folks, I wouldn't spend money on that DVD because the exact same print of this movie is available in what's called the Sci-Fi Creature Classics 4 movie set. Now, just hear me out. It's got It Came From Beneath the Sea, 20 Million Miles to Earth, the original Mothra, and the Giant Claw for $4.99. Any one of those movies is worth $4.99.
Well, tell you the truth, though, Jay, The Giant Claw, which was another movie that was produced by
Sam Katzman,
yeah, is probably the cheesiest-looking creature ever put on celluloid film. And those who might even remember Reptilicus, those two were almost like twins in the cheese contest. But it's still a good movie. I mean, and for $4.99, it's probably 3 cents worth out of that $4.99, but the other three movies are definitely worth watching.
And if you remember, I don't remember when, I know my brother talked about an Earth Destruction Directive. I actually sent in a little review of the set, and they're all beautiful. They're black and white. They're the crisp cuts. They're just as good as anything Columbia released. Mill Creek put them out all together. They tend to release the budget stuff. Now, isn't there something about the Harryhausen was offered the Giant Claw?
Oh yeah, when Katzman, this is 2 years later, and it was right before Harryhausen was doing the Earth versus the Flying Saucers. He was offered the job of creating the Giant Claw, and he turned it down. Who knows what he would have had? Now, he was in the, long before he made even The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, Harryhausen had done a short called The Elementals, where you had a creature very, very similar to what would look like later on the Emir. And if he was in that mode of creating a winged serpent, so to speak, who knows what it would have been. And it might have been a classic. But as it turned out, it certainly wasn't a classic, but it was one of those that you could watch at 3 o'clock in the morning, have a good laugh, and then fall happily to sleep.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Harryhausen did, was it the Jupiterian? And that was one, yes, of those lost things. And I mean, to be honest, the Jupiterian could have become the Giant Claw, which would have put the Jupiterian on film. Actually, I mean, he did the test shots with mostly the drawings of that.
Right.
But you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda kind of thing. And I tell you, the Giant Claw is something to be beheld. Again, another one of those, if Spengulli's got it on Saturday nights, it's worth the time watching. Trust me, there's nothing in there that anyone's going to be like, oh no, I shouldn't let my kids see that. Except maybe they might be like, is that really what it could look like? Anyway, let's talk about Blu-ray, because I know some of you are like, Jay, I am totally done with DVD. I go Blu-ray. Well, there's what's called the Ray Harryhausen Collection, right? It's got 20 Million Miles to Earth, Earth vs. the Flying Saucer, It Came From Beneath the Sea, and Seven Points of Sympathy. I think that's what you have. You actually picked that up when it first released. That's going for about almost $67. Now, what I did was I picked up 20 Million Miles to Earth and It Came From Beneath the Sea for $7.99 on Blu-ray. Now, again, if you don't have any of the other ones, you can actually score Seven Voyages of Sinbad. You can actually score the Seven Voyages of Sinbad, Eye of the Tiger, Golden Voyage, and Jason and the Argonauts on Amazon. Look for the one that comes from the New Zealand release. That's all region. That's $50 for the four of them. That's a steal. Okay? But I went, and as soon as I saw that case was coming out, and $7.99 was well worth my investment to get the Blu-ray. Now, the Blu-rays of them, instead of being individual discs, that's a Mill Creek production, instead of the Columbia individual releases. There's two on the Blu-ray, but let's be honest, folks, it's a Blu-ray. Blu-rays can hold tons of data. Now, some of you say, Jay, I don't do any of that. I only do digital media. It's available. You can buy it right from Amazon with the digital download and own the movie for $10. I like physical media. I've always been one who likes... I also like books that you hold, and I like things like that, but it's all good. All right. I want to do the live read. Now, this is a live read that's near and dear to my heart. Unlike the last... Well, not that doing the Earth Structure Directive or the Biscuit Basket ones weren't fun, but this is one that I actually went to people and I said, I want to do this read. We're talking about Jersey Fest. Now, some of you might have heard me talk about, or not heard, seen me talk about Jersey Fest. You may have heard me speak about Jersey Fest, especially when I was talking about when I met Steve Wang, who is one of the people who have helped shape how I do models and how I look at even film. Jersey Fest is the premier East Coast model and statue show. And it is, without a shadow of doubt, one of my favorite times of the year to go. This year, the Jersey Fest will be running August 26th, 27th, and 28th at the Hanover Marriott in Whippany, New Jersey. Now, you think to yourself, I don't really want to go to New Jersey, but you know what? The hotel is beautiful. The show is outstanding. It is utterly amazing, and I have funny stories about this, but I just want to tell you about it. It is amazing how nice a show that they all put on. The guys who run it, Dave and Saul Alvarez and Rick Cantu and Steve Park, and those names may not mean much to you. Google them. They are phenomenal artists. They put on an amazing show, especially Saul and Rob and Dave, who run the whole thing. They put a great show out every year. It has just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger from the first one that they actually let people come to and not just have it at Dave's house to now. It is now phenomenal. In fact, this is the big get. Now, in the past, Phil Tippett was there a couple years back, right? Phil Tippett was, we spoke with Phil Tippett. You know, he walks in, everyone, you know. Jordy Ushel, you might recognize that name. He's done a ton of movies. He's on Face Off, stuff like that. Guys, who even people from Face Off and stuff, they have him there. My buddy, Jake Korick, who was from the Jim Henson Creature Shop Challenge. I've known Jake since he was in... I was buying models from Jake when he was a teenager. That's how good this guy is. So those names may not mean much to you, but a name that might mean something to you, especially those of you who are into comic books, is the name Randy Bowen. Yes, Randy Bowen is going to be there this year, folks. And it's not just Randy Bowen's going to show up for 5 minutes like Alex Ross might do at a show. Sorry, Alex. But it's true. Randy Bowen on Friday is teaching a sculpting class where you're going to sculpt a bust of the Hulk. Randy Bowen is going to be teaching you. Not Randy Bowen's second guy, not some other guy. The guy who did all those Marvel busts that are filling up your walls and shelves, that's him. He's going to be there. And the great part is all weekend he's doing presentations. They'll have a set schedule of times. You'll be there. He'll do presentations on sculpting. He'll do talks. That's how my dad and I sat there and we talked with Steve Wang. And we were in a room full of people who were just marking out. I mean, completely marking out for Steve Wang. And then I asked actual questions and people looked at me like I was crazy because I actually had questions I wanted answered about how to integrate, you know, CG with physical effects and stuff like that. But Randy Bowen, that to me is a huge one. I can't wait to meet Randy Bowen. I've been a fan of his work for a long time. And the other name that was announced, and again, as we're recording this, the other things will come out, but the other name that's announced is actually even bigger to me than Randy Bowen. You may not know him, but folks, if you don't, look him up. His name is Casey Love. Casey Love is one of the most influential artists that I have ever had the chance to speak to or see the art of, and I can't wait to meet him. He's doing an airbrushing class on Friday, and we don't even know what the piece is yet. We have no idea. Every year we get find out the pieces. Those of you who have seen my work, my Dracula from a couple years back that Steve Park did, that was a class he taught. Last year we did The Mummy. Steve taught that one again. A few years back, some of you have seen my Gillman from the creature from the Gillman from The Creature Walks Among Us. That was a class Saul taught, Saul Alvarez. And then also you've seen my Gillman from Monster Squad, and that was the class that a man named Rick Cantu, another amazing artist, taught. Even going back to my Curse of the Werewolf, and that was Saul taught that. But Jim Capone, again, a name that may not mean much to you, but Jim Capone, if you want to see a realistic looking, it may only be 6 inches tall, but it looks like a real woman, that's the man to go to. He was walking around, Steve Park was walking around, guys are doing that, helping us out, doing with stuff. So Casey is also, now, Casey Love, just to give you some, he's worked with K&B Effects, Amalgamated Dynamics, and Totopolis Studios. So those are some big names in the Hollywood special effects game. He worked on movies like Predators from 2010, Alien vs. Predator Requiem from 2007, and The Cave. And there's many more, but I just don't want to say that. And he's going to be there all weekend doing presentations. He'll have pieces to buy. His mask work, some of you may know him just from his mask work alone. His masks are phenomenal. These are the kind of people I love hanging out with. This was a live read that I wanted to do. This wasn't anyone saying, hey, can you put me over? I told them. I called up Saul and said, I'm putting you guys over. Why? Because this is what it needs to be. The Jersey Fest is again, August 26th, 27th, 28th. If you're interested in going, you want to go to jerseyfestfair.com. That's jerseyfestfair.com. All the information is there. If you're interested in vending there, contact them right through the site. If you're interested in attending, getting a hotel room, they have blocks of time set up. It's my Christmas. It is the best time of the year.
Yeah, Jason, the hotels have a fixed rate of $107 a night, which is really, really reasonable. The dates are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you're going for just the show, or the vendor show, those are Saturday and Sunday only. Mm-hmm. The Friday is for all the classes that are being taught by all of these great artists. But they have no problem with you being a fly on the wall in any of these if you just want to sit there, because it is so instructive. I mean, I don't particularly participate in building. I like to roam around the various rooms that the artists are working in. But sometimes you get so involved, and I just sit there, and for about, next thing I know, it's a half an hour later. But I've picked up so much information and so many good ideas that when I go back home, and if I'm doing a kit, I try to incorporate them.
Yeah. We found, and this is one of the things, is that when we first went to Jersey Fest, Dad and I went down, we are meeting the people who the articles we read that we were trying to do the work they were doing. We were trying to copy them from the articles in AFM. We were trying to out of kit builders, out of the, what was it, Modelers Resource. And that's the great part about the internet. And we've had this discussion. And again, anyone on the network can tell you this too. We haven't necessarily met everybody, and yet we're friends with these people. And this is the thing, is now I'm getting to meet these people, and now I'm getting to start picking their brains, and I asked them small things. And to be honest, there was a time when I was terrified to have Steve Wang look at anything I ever painted, let alone something that he painted. When he walked into the Gilman class, and he comes over and he's looking at the Gilman that he sculpted. He had sculpted the Creature Walks Among Us piece. He had sculpted that. It's a humongous piece. And he's over there, and the guys are sitting at him going, wow, that's the guy who just sculpted this. Then he comes over to look at the stuff we're doing on the Monster Squad Gilman. He invented this. This is the guy who Stan Winston said, hey, do this. Good luck. And he came up with all these great ideas, and he's like, this is great. And he's giving you tips, and you're like, this is insane. There's never a time when I think, I can't imagine it would be, to me, tantamount to if you were a basketball player and Michael Jordan started giving you tips on things. Something along those lines like that. Or if you're an aspiring artist and let's say Neil Adams pulls you aside and tells you how to work something out. I mean, that to me is what this is tantamount to. So, like I said, Jersey Fest, folks, if you're interested in going, you can always shoot me an email too. I'll put them over all day long. I love those guys. But definitely go to jerseyfestfair.com. Dates are Friday, August 26th for all the, that's the sculpting class and the painting class. There's actually another painting class for, they're doing a Creature in Black Lagoon mini bust, which is on the cheaper side. If you don't like to airbrush, that's all done with brushes. There is a sci-fi one. All these things haven't all been released, and they will be released. And you go there, you get the updates. And the show is the 27th and 28th. The model contest room is insane. You will see stuff you don't even imagine that people did. The guys who came over from Japan last year, I don't know how they got the stuff there, but their pieces were insanely good. Like, we're looking at this going, I don't even think I was even doing the same thing they were doing. Like, it's like someone's playing chess and someone's playing checkers. You're technically playing a game with the same kind of board, but it's not even seeing this thing. They are just that good, and you'll be happy that if you're into models or you're into figures and statues, there's guys there who do that stuff, who do repaints and stuff. My buddy Ed Bradley's a great at doing that. And if you're into doing that stuff, I'll be honest, folks, my daughter's five. She last year she took a kid's gold for her bust that she did. It was a piece that Brian Dunn sculpted and she actually painted. This year, my buddy Ed Bradley actually gave her one to do. He gave her a Hellboy. And she, my daughter at five, scratch built a base for it, painted it up with a marbleization that looks like real marble. And she painted a comic book style Hellboy that is phenomenal. She's five, but she talks about these people as if they are their celebrities to her. And they're the people that inspire her at 5 years old and obviously her dad. And she gets to hang out and do this stuff. That's what I'm talking about, folks. We've talked about this plenty of times. Anything that you can do to inspire, you know, don't just sit there and stare at a screen generation. Let's get them up and moving. I love painting. My dad, you know, has been painting models for when he was a kid, and I didn't get into it as some people may know. 9/11. Again, we're all from New York, and thank God we were safe. But when 9/11 happened, I had no way to deal with it, and I clearly I didn't know what to do. So got in the car, drove to the hobby store, and I wind up picking up, a model, and I just started painting. I picked up some paint, some brushes, and a model. And I just started painting. And that's the only way I knew how to deal with it. And that eventually became something that I now do, you know, on a regular basis. I do, you know, and if you see my stuff, some people actually like it. I love it, but some people enjoy it too. If you want to get in touch with us here on the show, and again, that doesn't mean just emailing me. You can email, send the email, and I'll forward it to my dad, and he'll get back to you. The email address is botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. All the emails, I'll answer every email, and then we'll work them into shows where they're appropriate. Also, if you're looking to find me online, you've heard me talk about this, on Facebook, I'm under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group, not necessarily always in the comic book stuff. Sometimes my stuff is just being, you know, smart alecky, but it happens. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective. Which is where I post a lot of my horror stuff. If you're interested in seeing that stuff, also, you can search out the hashtag, The Art of Horror Collective, especially on Facebook. I hashtag all my stuff with that. On Instagram, you can find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag, The Art of Horror Collective, and the new hashtag, Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast, which I also put out there for those people who are looking for that. I have a website, www.theartofhorrorcollective.com. .wordpress.com. That's got reviews, some of Luke's old stuff, some of my stuff. It sometimes has pictures and stuff, but to be honest, folks, if you want to find me, I'm not hard to find. If you got something to say, let us hear it, because we want to hear from you guys. We're doing this. We are not getting paid a dime to do this, so we want you guys to enjoy this and have some quality entertainment, and hopefully you can spend the half hour, 45 minutes with us, and you're like, oh man, I really want to watch this movie. So, anything else, Dad, you want to add on this?
No, I'm really happy that to be part of this. It's really bringing my childhood back into play here. And you know that for 50 years I've been building models and watching these movies, and it's really funny. No matter what time of day or night, if we're flipping through the channels and a Harryhausen movie comes on, we could be halfway through it. I've seen this any one of his movies 50 times. I'll just sit there and watch it again. They're just that good. And again, like I said, if you enjoy these type of movies, you're never going to go wrong putting on a Harryhausen film, because the stories are pretty good, but the effects are amazing, and you'll be happy that that you've spent the 90 minutes or so. My only recommendation is that if you get a chance, try not to watch them with commercials, because the commercials are just getting to be 12 minutes every half hour. And the last thing you need to do is to have the Redosaurus attacking New York, and the next thing you see is a Tide washing machine commercial, soap commercial. It just destroys the ambience.
Yeah, folks, I mean, that's one of the reasons, you know, I've said it, I like physical media. I have no problem throwing one of these on. It is not unheard of for my daughter and I to, you know, especially if my wife, like let's say a Sunday morning, this morning we wind up watching actually some basketball, but if it's a Sunday morning and my daughter and I are up early, it would not unheard of. Her favorite, I mean, one of her favorite movies, well, besides Monster Squad, you know, those of you who heard this episode of Monster Squad, she loves it. Her favorite movie is Seven Voyages of Sinbad. She loves the Cyclops. She thinks that she doesn't understand why people don't just love the Cyclops as much as she does, and why they're being so mean to him. He's just a guy with one eye. You gotta love him. And another movie that she actually loves, I mean, she liked It Came From Beneath the Sea. She liked The Giant Octopus. But another movie she loves is the next one we're talking about. And it is another one in the Harryhausen canon, and it's The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. This is the movie that, you know, as my dad said, that he made it, and if it wasn't for that, Schneer wouldn't have seen him. And then once Harryhausen and Schneer got together, it just became the juggernaut of what we had, the pieces we had. There are certain things that go together, and the two of them definitely did as a producer and as a special effects artist who really impacted what Hollywood did and what special effects became. As we talked about on It Came From It, Terror From Beyond Space, and then today, and even with them, without these movies, there wouldn't have been the movies that came in the 70s and 80s and what we're getting now. We're getting the monster kids of the 50s and 60s. They grew into the directors of the movies that became the most important stuff, and that's inspired the next generation. And you got to keep inspiring the next generation, because if you don't, folks, we're going to get the same, still going to get this tired retread we keep getting. Push new stuff, get out there and do it. Okay, folks, so that was great. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I had a great time talking with my dad today. You know, you can finally hear in some of the stuff we talk about normally. And next time out, we're going to do The Beast in 20,000 Fathoms. So keep those cards and letters coming, and keep watching the skies.
The picture was also a surprise box office success and led to a meeting that would shape his future.
There was a young producer who wanted to make a picture about an octopus tearing down the Golden Gate Bridge. So I thought, well, that's rather an interesting challenge. So I went over to the studio to meet him, and his name was Charles Schneer.
What interested me was putting something on the screen that nobody else had on the screen, which was difficult to find. And I was interested in visuals and locations that had not been photographed, and I was also interested in leaving California to find those locations, because every rock, every tree within 50 miles of Los Angeles had been photographed.
The Golden Gate Bridge was only 400 miles away, and it had been photographed aplenty, but not in quite the way they planned to do it in It Came From Beneath the Sea.
We submitted the script to the San Francisco City Fathers, and they came back with the answer that they wouldn't cooperate because they were afraid that any destruction to the new bridge they had just built would suggest that it's not very substantial. So we had to, through devious means, I might say, we put a camera in the back of a bakery truck and drove back and forth forth over the bridge to get the background plates. We were trying to do a very spectacular type of story with very little money. The budget was so low that I found that if I had an octopus, two less tentacles to animate would save some money on the special effects and time. Time is money, of course. So I cut off two tentacles, and actually we had a sextopus. We kept them disguised underneath the water because nobody would count them, we didn't think.
Ray's little secret was eventually betrayed in a magazine read by fantasy film fans. But it didn't spoil anyone's fun.
I don't think there were any repercussions. I don't recall the City Fathers banning the picture. And I'm sure that no one really worried about an octopus pulling down the Golden Gate Bridge. I seem to be a destructive person. I like to do things of mass destruction.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?